The Unsigned Chart on Cambridge 105.
Four minutes then past 6 o'clock, time to start off our entertainment hour. Sky and Hattie are here at the next door in the green room. By the looks of things, Sky's had a haircut as well. We might ask him about that over the next 60 minutes or so. Beforehand, we'll dip into the unsigned chart and we'll begin with the new entry. The band is Screen People. Here's All Seeing Eyes.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive.
If it works, it will be bliss. I'll be reborn again. But if it works, you will be missed. You'll be reborn again. But the darkness from your seeing eyes consumes the endless hate and lies of goodness, will and love. But if it works, it will be bliss. They've won, I'll give you that.
Guy's come in and he's got a box. What's, come on, what's in the box?
Oh, right, well, I basically got, it's a late birthday present. Well, it was ordered, but it came in from America.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Hattie. And it's just basically an internet website, and you go on there and you sign up for a subscription for whoever, you know, you want to give the gift to.
Or yourself.
And it's a mystery box, and you get one a month, or if you subscribe to more. And, it's a mystery theme, basically, and the one I got this time was villains. And basically it's aimed at sort of geekiness, video games, TV, movies, that kind of thing.
Comic books.
And, yeah, so I've got a villains one. I got some Deadpool socks. I got a Wicked T-shirt, which is a...
So a Wicked T-shirt, a T-shirt about Wicked, or
no,
a T-shirt
sorry,
that is Wicked?
Sorry.
A T-shirt that is Wicked.
Okay. So you have to clarify these things.
Design of, like, the Joker and Loki amalgamated. I got a Harley Quinn poster. There's a CD with some comics on it, an actual comic, And
it's in a nice box as well. It's all boxed up and packaged very nicely. The drawings on the inside. Did you do the drawings, or were they there anyway?
No, they were there.
It's difficult to tell from this angle.
Normally, it's quite a plain inside, but as it's villain themed, it's all been graffitied.
Yes. I quite like the look. That's pretty good.
Okay, so, I look forward to next month when I get one.
I think we have to come and bring it in every month and tell it. In fact, next time I want you to open it on air. And you need to hold your excitement until it's all done, and then that way we can take a little look at it ourselves and share it with the listener.
The top five records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
So, Screen People, All Seeing Eyes, the new entry this week. You may have heard them perform, I think, during the Cambridge Rock Festival. The chart itself, at 5, The Wonderful Cab Driver, Burning Heart. 4, Venus V, Way to Your Heart. At number 3 is Tom Lumley, Every Day. At number 2, The Abstracts, Track 13, which means they're still there at number 1. The number 1, week 115 in the unsigned chart. A band from Huntingdon, Ambury Knight. And the song, None.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive. Cambridge's favourite entry this week. This is the Unsigned Chart, number one.
Amber Knight and Non. They are number one in the unsigned chart this week, and we'll go through the unsigned chart as it stands on Monday night on the programme just after 6 o'clock here, so you can see where your favourite artists have landed. Don't forget to vote. That's the only way we can sort out the positions, really. You need to go to the website cambridge105.fm/unsigned chart. Right, coming up next, we've got film and theatre with Sky and Hattie. I should explain, guys, we've relabeled or renamed the microphones because we decided it was a bit too plain, really. So we have Mauve. Tony Della started this on Tuesday.
No such colour as mauve, but sure.
No such colour as mauve.
I'm a little bit colourblind, so mauve is really just grey.
No. It's fine if you're colourblind because the teal is next to the mauve.
Teal and mauve. And what's the last one?
Well, you have a choice, you see.
It's either
scarlet or crimson.
I was going to go for burgundy, but...
Burgundy?
Sure.
I didn't think of that one. Oh, no.
I'm quite liking crimson, though.
Crimson. Okay,
crimson.
That's
like my
good.
Sunglasses.
Not claret?
Bit dark.
But yeah.
Just think yourself lucky she didn't decide she was a scarlet woman. Right. Hattie Button switched on already. What do we have coming up?
We're going to be reviewing Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, also giving you tasters of Hercules and Boyhood out tomorrow.
And in theatre?
Anything goes at the ADC.
Anything goes. Starting off with film, and where are we going, Skye?
Well, I'll pass over to Hattie.
Where are we going?
We are going to the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Man and apes embark on a spectacular collision course in the thrilling sequel to The Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Don't mean any harm! Go!
Okay, we're going.
So it's just kind of like the PG Tips adverts used to be.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. 10 years have passed since apes and men went their separate ways after the Battle of the Golden Gate Bridge. Mankind has been all but wiped out by the simian flu. Caesar, meanwhile, leads an evolving, peaceful ape society in the depths of San Francisco's Muir Woods. When a band of human survivors stumble across the ape village, Malcolm and Ellie are eager to promote peace between these former enemies. But they reckon without hot-headed survivors, Dreyfus, who leads an army of soldiers and is hell-bent on revenge. That's a bit of an overstatement, really.
Yes, it is.
It's not hell-bent on revenge. It's just...
Not really.
He'd awfully like to see a bit of revenge happening.
Yeah, he wouldn't mind.
Okay.
But I think it's more about the survival of the human race, because it's next to nothing at this point.
Okay.
Which I don't think is a spoiler, because you kind of get that from the trailers.
Yeah.
this is directed by Matt Reeves, who directed Cloverfield.
Like that one?
Yeah. And it begins exactly where the previous film left off. The credit sequence at the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes opens Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, just in a slightly different way. It's just a re-rendering, if you like. So it leads on really, really well. I mean, 10 years have passed, but it's put together spectacularly. Mm. I was incredibly impressed. It holds the tension really well. And it's a lot more action-packed than the first one, which was quite slow, quite drawn out, which I suppose suited it, but I wasn't the biggest fan of. I felt like everything happened in the last, like, 20 seconds.
It's always... It was always in the originals, it was like the future had already happened, basically.
Yeah.
And they tried to make this as a pre... You know, Rise of the Planet Apes was a prequel, and it was treated as such. And I think that's why it feels like it doesn't really kick off until, like, the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. The CGI rendering of the apes is incredible. The technology used in this is really quite stunning. It makes the film... totally emotional and really encapsulating. A lot of the time, when you go and see a CGI film like Transformers, like anything green screened, you know, Alice in Wonderland, all that kind of stuff, you can almost feel like you're watching the pixels.
I get the impression, though, that aids what is effectively a movie which is, as much as a movie like this can be about character, than it is about action sequences and punch-ups, although I dare say there's a few of those too.
Oh, there's a few.
there's plenty.
Yeah, I mean, it's so well put together because, you know, you don't have that jarring effect when you're going from a close-up of a monkey face to, you know, the live actors. You know, it's so
pretty
well
seamless,
done.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis as Caesar is, you know, phenomenal as always. He's an absolute leader in his field. And Toby Kebbell, who plays another... I need to stop calling them monkeys. They are apes. They would be very cross if they heard me calling them monkeys. Toby Kebbell, yeah, he's a reasonable newcomer to professional mocap. But again, really, really good. They have a fantastic team behind this. The live-action cast were also excellent. I need to find more adjectives. Gary Oldman, good as usual. Jason Clarke, who I'm quite a big fan of, actually. I think he's fast becoming somebody who can bring in a lot of emotion to action-packed films.
Where do I know him from, then?
Zero Dark Thirty,
okay.
White House Down, which is probably not the best show of his...
Caliber of acting, yeah. I suppose, yes.
But both brilliant performances, and they walk a very fine line as well, because a lot of the time you find yourself on the ape side, hilariously.
Ooh.
So, even though we're humans. But it holds true to the first, you know, the previous footage is incorporated, footage from the previous film, there we go,
yes.
Is incorporated really well. Caesar finds a camera, or the camera that James Franco's character in the first one used, and to film his, you know, learning and education experience, and, you know, plays back clips from the first film and, you know, other scenes that we didn't see. And
Monkey's home movie. Sorry, apes,
yeah.
First movies.
Pretty much. But yes, yeah, so...
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Sorry, I haven't really let you get a word in edgewise, have I?
No.
No change there, then.
It's a really... I say it's definitely improvements on the first one, and I think it carries on the legacy of Planet of the Apes really well. Take it a slightly different tangent. I mean, you haven't got... It feels more realistic, if that makes sense, because you haven't got guys dressed up as apes, as humans walking around. I mean, I don't know where they can really take it if there was to be a third film, unless they start dressing up like humans and...
Helena Bonham Carter, that's where you take it.
I think it will be really interesting to see what they do with the third one. I think it can either be a remake of The Planet of the Apes, a re-remake of The Planet of the Apes, or they're going to take it on a different path and show a different side to the story that has already been told. But maybe sort of, you know.
Do we know who's somebody's lined up to direct and produce, or is
no
that still
news,
a mystery?
No news as yet.
Okay.
But
this has
we'll
done well,
updated.
So it will certainly it.
Oh
will
yeah,
continue.
They're already signed on for a sequel, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
To see.
But
how
it's
goes.
Great. This one is good as a great as a standalone one.
Bit
it helps.
Long.
Yeah.
Or it felt long to me. It was only 2 hours, but it felt quite long. So that being said, very good.
Okay.
Yes.
Times.
You could see it in 2D and 3D. We saw it in 2D, but I'm hearing good reports on the 3D. And as everybody knows, I hate 3D. So it's on tonight at Vue in 2D at 7:30, 8 o'clock and 9:30, and in 3D at 8:30, and at Cineworld in 2D at 8:20, and in 3D at 7:30 and 10 past 9. There's lots and lots of showings at Vue over the weekend, and about 4 or 5 showings a day at Cineworld, so check local listings.
OK, I get people occupied, I guess, if they want to spend some time in a nice air-conditioned cinema.
Yes, you know
it
what?
It was pretty cold.
It was
in
quite
there.
Chilly. had to wear a cardigan. Crikey.
This place feels like the freezer section now.
Oh,
the
my
supermarket.
Gosh. It is delightful coming in here. Yes. That's why we were early this time.
Yes, always an incentive. Thank you very much. More to come in just a moment. Emma said she was about to write a resignation letter, but she doesn't mean here, so don't worry. It's Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, 25 before 7, Thursday night, the Entertainment Hour, film and theatre. And we're looking at film. And where have we got to now?
We're going to look at Boyhood. Sounds very interesting, actually. Filmed over 12 years, Richard Linklater's astonishing innovative drama charts a boy's journey through adolescence. So back in 2002, single mother Olivia is struggling to raise her children, six-year-old Mason and his older sister Samantha. Unreliable dad Mason Jr., played by Ethan Hawke, shows up mainly at weekends. The family then relocate to Houston. Over the next 12 years, the film charts Mason growing from young boy to man. What's so remarkable about the insightful, groundbreaking drama is that Richard Linklater used the same cast throughout. So really, it's almost like a documentary because the casts are, well, you could say Mason is like a non-actor to begin with. I mean, he was only 6 years old when they started filming, and it's basically they keep revisiting, and he's very familiar with that because in his films, if you've familiar with the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset trilogy, Before Midnight, that was about it was Ethan Hawke and Julie Delphi, who are a couple that meet in the first film, and then he revisits them like years later, but they physically have grown as people.
So familiar territory for him. This one's a little bit more dangerous, if you like, because quite easily I guess at age six, the young actor was pushed forward by mum and dad. Here, this will be your big opportunity. And then, potentially, as he got older, he could say, no, it's not for me, don't fancy it.
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar. I don't think the guy who plays Mason is Ella Coltrane. I don't think he has much of a sort of a history in films. So I think he's purely picked for this role and has actually been kept on, and they keep revisiting him. And it's good because at least you feel like the acting is almost, with the story narrative itself, is kind of linked together. Like, these emotions are more realistic because he's going through them, you know, in his real life. So it's definitely something I'd be interested in watching, and you can catch it at Cineworld, but only showing one showing a day, I'm afraid. So it opens tomorrow, and it's on at 8 o'clock in the evening, and that's for the whole week.
This has got Picture House written all over it.
Yes, it has.
It does, and they are showing it more. You can actually watch it tonight at 8 o'clock if you wish at the Picture House, or it's on three showings tomorrow at 2:15, 6:25, and 8:15. So it's definitely one to look out for if you're a fan of, innovative dramas.
Mm-hmm.
OK, so moving on then, and to not-so-innovative drama, Hercules.
Yes.
Says it all.
Yeah.
And on next week's programme, no.
So, Hercules, it's Dwayne Johnson, who most people, know as The Rock wrestling, but he's sort of done away with that moniker. It's probably copyrighted by WWE as well. He plays Hercules, who battles terrifying foes in a fresh and visceral new take on this legendary action hero.
The gods that killed your family have unleashed hell on Earth. They are the descendants of Hades. They cannot be killed by an ordinary mortal.
The people need you.
I am no hero.
With a cause can be stronger than a god. We get some
rules to follow. Take revenge for your family. Save these people. And restore order to this world.
Do we die in this battle?
My time's not come yet. Not sure about yours.
We will fight for you. And we will die for you.
Have faith in yourself. Now. Tell me. Who are you?
I am Hercules!
Peculiar use of Queens of the Stone Age early on there. Definitely.
I didn't understand any of that.
Well, if you're familiar with Greek mythology, having completed his character-defining 12 labours, tormented Hercules has become a battle-weary warrior who leads a band of mercenaries. The King of Thrace, played by John Hurt, calls upon him to help end a bloody civil conflict by defeating a savage, brutal warlord. Now Hercules must find the strength to become a hero again, but this will not simply be a battle against a formidable enemy, but a fight for his very soul. Fast and Furious star Dwayne Johnson underwent 8 months of serious working out for this role. X-Men Last Stand director Brett Ratner brilliantly conjures up such mythological enemies such as the Hydra and Gargantuan Boar, while rooting his Hercules in heart-pounding, gritty, realistic warfare. The exceptional supporting cast includes Ian McShane, Joseph Fiennes and Rufus Sewell, who got a clip of saying, joking how strenuous the training was.
By the end of it, eating nothing but salmon and chicken and broccoli, I was thinking, I'm in great shape, I'm looking pretty good, you know. And then Dwayne Johnson turns up and I have to stand next to him, which changes everything.
Salmon, chicken and broccoli.
Sounds lovely.
Make a note.
Not every day, but... what can I say, really? It's Hercules. I'm not a massive...
I don't understand. You know, they could have got a whole film, possibly two or three, out of the 12 labours.
Yeah.
And yet they decide to brush all that to one side and have him off as a mercenary.
Yeah, make it a newish story. I think it's based on a graphic novel.
It'll just be done the A-Team again and they're done with it.
I have literally no interest in seeing this film unless The Rock is going to be singing I Can Go the Distance.
Does The Rock sing as well?
No, he doesn't. But in the Disney film. In the Disney film, it's my favourite one.
What Disney film?
Hercules.
Oh, I see.
Disney version of Hercules.
Sorry, I thought The Rock had been in the Disney film. It's been miscast.
He might well have been, to be honest, knowing him.
He has done movies with Disney in the past, but there's no Tooth Fairy in this one. No. I'm sure it'll be fun. I'm sure it'll be fun. If you like 300, that kind of thing, I'm sure there'll be plenty of action.
And if you like The Rock.
And if you like The Rock, that is the main selling point. And he was last year like the most he made the most money, basically. He was the richest actor in Hollywood through like the franchises with Fast and Furious and other films. So
he's so nice He's such a nice chap. I don't know him personally, but you get that impression from
he's just got
interviews.
Such charisma, hasn't he, on the screen and off it, so, yeah.
And we've all seen that terribly 90s picture of him with the bum bag and the turtleneck. <Yeah. laughs> So see him wearing slightly less than...
Have we got times?
Yes.
Yes, I've got times.
Let's finish up that.
I believe there's 3D showings at Cineworld at tomorrow at 20 to 1, 20 past 6, 10 past 9, and 11:30. There is 1 2D showing tomorrow at Cineworld at 3:30. View are showing it, but they haven't specified whether it's 2D or 3D, so I'm guessing it's 2D. At 1 o'clock, 3:30, 10 to 6, 10 past 8, and 20 to 12. So yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Theatre to come.
Yes.
Chicken and broccoli for me. Cambridge 105. We've just got time to do some theatre with Hattie. What are we going to be talking about this week?
We are going to head off to the ADC Theatre for Anything Goes. Join us on board the SS American as Cambridgeshire-born theatre company KD Theatre make their ADC Theatre debut with the hit Broadway musical Anything Goes, telling the story of the evangelist turned nightclub singer Reno Sweeney as she boards a cruise liner for song, dance and romance. This romantic comedy musical has it all. Featuring the songs of Cole Porter, including It's Still Lovely, I Get a Kick Out of You, You're the Top and the title number, Anything Goes, this show will keep your toes tapping throughout. Anything Goes will be dazzling with West End quality. It really will be the top.
You know, I'm familiar with the songs, but I don't think I've ever seen it. So, the plot...
I've seen the film.
The plot is described there. It's completely bewildering. an evangelist turned nightclub singer. Where did he get that one from?
Yeah, that's Reno Sweeney, as she heads off for song, dance and romance.
And what does she find en route? Song, dance and romance, you're going to tell me, don't you?
Yeah, dancing, singing and romance. So...
Not to spoil anything.
Yeah. It'll be a fantastic night, as Theatre at the ADC always is. It runs until Saturday evening this week. Performances at 7:45 and a matinee at 2:30 on Saturday. Tickets are £12 and £10, available from adctheatre.com or by phoning the box office on 01223 300 85.
I only ever think of Anything Goes as the song number at the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It's done quite well there.
Oh, yeah.
The same one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's another fact while we're on that for you. The club that Indiana Jones goes to at the start of Temple of Doom is called Club Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Oh, very clever.
Is your mind not just blown right now?
How's his foot?
Probably better than it was.
Okay.
I would hazard a guess,
I just wondered,
have some concrete evidence, I'm afraid. So that's Anything Goes.
I think concrete evidence is what caused the trouble to the foot in the first place. But, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you again next week. We'll finish with Bastille and Flaws.